From Latrobe to Westchester, Mexico to Lafayette Hill, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Philadelphia's soda tax is hurting retailers and consumers alike. Now the legislature may act to put an end to such taxes. David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is here to host a Capital Watch roundtable discussion. And Pittsburgh and Philadelphia are competing for Amazon's HQ2. But should government be spending our tax dollars to subsidize highly profitable companies? I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. One of the most bizarre primary election seasons in Pennsylvania history came to an end on Tuesday as voters went to the polls to select party nominees for statewide congressional and legislative offices. In the hotly contested Republican primary for governor, State Senator Scott Wagner easily bested Allegheny Countyans Paul Mango and Laura Ellsworth for the right to square off against incumbent Governor Tom Wolf in the November general election. Republican voters also nominated Congressman Lou Barletta to challenge incumbent U.S. Senator Robert P. Casey Jr. Races for lieutenant governor got more attention than usual this year. Wagner had selected Montgomery County businessman Jeff Bartos as his running mate. Bartos cruised to an easy win on Tuesday. The upset came in the Democratic primary, where incumbent Lieutenant Governor Mike Stack was demolished by Braddock Mayor John Fetterman. Stack, who has been dogged by scandal and shunned by Governor Wolf, actually finished a distant fourth in a five-person race. Tuesday was also a bad night for incumbent legislators in Allegheny County. The only incumbent state senator to lose was Republican Senator Randy Volokovic, who was soundly defeated by Ross Township Commissioner Jeremy Schaefer. Volokovic had been targeted for defeat by the Conservative Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania for his votes in favor of higher taxes and spending. On the Democratic side of the ballot, left-wing candidates prevailed in primaries, ousting incumbent state representatives Dom and Paul Costa. Across the state in Philadelphia, State Representative Emilio Vasquez lost a primary bid to Danilo Burgos. Of note in congressional races, State Representative Rick Saccone, who lost a special election in March to now Congressman Connor Lamb, again came up short. Saccone ran in a newly drawn district and lost to State Senator Guy Reschenthaler. Reschenthaler will now face Democrat Bibiana Borio for what is an open seat. In the heavily Republican 13th Congressional District, centered in the Altoona area, but running from Ligonier to Gettysburg, establishment favorite John Joyce prevailed in an eight-way primary over three candidates who split the conservative vote. And finally, voters in the 7th Congressional District, that in the Lehigh Valley, will choose between Republican Marty Norstein and Democrat Susan Wild to replace Congressman Charlie Dent, who resigned from Congress last week. Read about all things Pennsylvania at the all-new patownhall.com. The city of Philadelphia has instituted a special tax on soda, that's pop for our listeners in the western part of the state. As a result, consumers are paying more and retailers are losing sales to neighboring municipalities. Here to talk about efforts to outlaw such punitive taxes is our Capital Watch crew. David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Kevin Shivers from the National Federation of Independent Business and our special guest, Anthony Campisi of the Pennsylvania Coalition to Repeal Food and Beverage Taxes. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, Kevin Shivers, Executive State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. Kevin, thanks for being on the program.
Great to be with you again, David.
So President Reagan said about the government's view of business is pretty simple. If it moves tax it. If it keeps moving, regulate it. If it stops moving, subsidize it. Well, unfortunately, we see an awful lot of that too much about taxing anything that moves. And certainly one of the things that that government is looking to surtax, of course, it's all for the children and it's all for our good, is to tax anything, any beverage that has been sweetened.
Yeah, that actually happened in Philadelphia. The city council decided to tax sugary beverages. And so if you are in the city of Philadelphia, you want a regular soda, you want a cranberry juice cocktail, even a diet beverage. They found a way to pigeonhole diet beverages into the sugary drink definition and to impose a surcharge there. Here's the worst part about it, though, David, is it's taxed on a per ounce basis. And so literally the amount of tax you pay is almost equal to the amount of beverage that you purchase. I was in Philadelphia several weeks ago with my wife and went to the sandwich shop to dutifully buy lunch for my family. And, you know, my wife asked me when I ordered her shorty sub if she could, get me a soda. And so I went out and got her shorty sub and I bought her chips and I pulled a soda out of the cooler rack, went to the counter, paid for it all. The bill was a little bit higher than I expected. And when I took a look at the register sheet for a $1.99 soda, there was a $1.29 in taxes that were paid.
You're not going to do that again, are you?
We will never do that. But here's what's amazing about it is it's actually changed behavior in that city. If you go out and you get a cheesesteak, a lot of restaurants no longer offer free refills on your beverage. And worse, many of them have altogether eliminated the soda fountain in the restaurants or in these convenience shops. So it's worse than just imposing this tax. It's changing behavior in a lot of really bad ways.
Well, and inevitably, we are Americans, and that when government goes and screws us over, people fight back. And so that's why I want to welcome our guest, Anthony Campisi, who's the spokesman for the coalition that has emerged in response to this industry killing tax. Anthony, thanks for being on the program.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
So what's the scoop? What are you guys doing?
Yeah, so we saw what happened in Philadelphia. And I mean, as Kevin said, this hits, you know, more than 4,000 types of beverages, right? Anything with natural or artificial sweetener, right? Even almond milk gets taxed under this. And we also saw the economic impact. So we commissioned an economic impact study, look at the, you know, effect that this is having. And it found that this has cost nearly 1,200 local jobs in the city of Philadelphia. Mm. And 70% of those jobs are retailers and particularly supermarkets. So the Pennsylvania years ago created a program to essentially open up supermarkets in poor urban neighborhoods especially, and also poor rural neighborhoods. And the idea was you wanted to increase fresh food access and also generate jobs, right? One supermarket can employ up to 300 people. And because of this tax, so many people are now shopping outside of the city of Philadelphia. So it's not just that they're getting their, you know, their iced tea outside Philadelphia, right? They're doing all their weekly shopping.
If you're going to the store, you might as well just do it all in one place.
Exactly. So total supermarket store sales in Philadelphia have dropped 8% as a result of this tax.
Anthony, and I can attest to that and provide a real-world anecdote. My in-laws are from the city of Philadelphia, and whenever they visit us here in central Pennsylvania, my in-laws, they're like World War—
Hey, don't narc them.
Yeah, you know, they're bootlegger. They're literally like World War III preppers. They bring one less bag of luggage with them so that they can go down to the local grocery store here and stock up on cranberry juice cocktail and other beverages, iced teas and other things, because they don't want to pay the extra tax.
Anthony, what's the coalition working to do? What's the goal here?
Sure. So we saw what's going on here and started working on a bill that's making its way through Harrisburg. So it's passed out of a committee in the House of Representatives, and it's scheduled to be voted on by the entire House, hopefully by the end of the month. And what it would do is prevent any local government from levying any tax on any food, beverage, or food container. So, you know, if Pittsburgh wants to consider a beverage tax, right? If the city of Harrisburg wants to tax French fries, right? If, you know, somebody wants to put a tax on, you know, like a container tax, the city of Philadelphia was considering, you know, a tax per, you know, plastic bottle sold. This sort of stops that in its tracks, and it stops local officials from getting creative in developing new ways to take money out of working families.
You know, and it makes me wish that our elected officials were more focused on just doing well the core responsibilities of government, doing them effectively, affordably, and then stopping and like leaving us alone. But instead, it's like they want to just maximize collections to the government to aggrandize more power unto themselves, more influence, more control over us and our lives. I mean, good grief. It's like at least leave my drink out of it.
You know, I think the two real concerns here, actually three major concerns, at least for my organization. Number one is the constitutionality here, the ability of the city, in this case, the city of Philadelphia, to impose this type of tax. We believe as an organization that it's beyond their constitutional authority. And NFIB, my organization, our legal center, actually has filed suit here in Pennsylvania, a case that now is before our state Supreme Court, where we argue that the city of Philadelphia or any municipality does not have the constitutional authority to impose a tax like this. Because today it could be sugary beverages. That doesn't mean tomorrow. It could be high caloric foods or greasy, a burger, whatever. Pick the type of food you want to impose that tax on. So that number one is really significant, because now with, 2,500 separate municipalities, each of them imposing these types of taxes, you can imagine what that would do not only to for consumers but also to the businesses in those areas. Number two, another concern is, what does this do to the poor? You know, as I mentioned, you know, my in-laws have the ability to drive somewhere else to get a beverage, you know, they can do that. They vote with their feet. But what about those people in the city who can't afford to drive somewhere else? The ones that are, you know, dealing with, in low income areas where there are what they call food deserts, where there aren't fresh foods, not enough access to foods. So not only are they not able to access these kinds of beverages, just because you're poor, you can't, doesn't mean you can't have a sugary beverage or a cranberry juice cocktail. But larger problem, as Anthony pointed out, as the foot traffic into those grocery stores, into those really disparate areas, as that foot traffic subsides, so too are the supermarkets. Mm-hmm. So you're going to see the real fear is that grocery stores are going to be shutting down in the poorest neighborhoods in that city, which are really going to impact the health and welfare of the residents, which is going to be a larger problem for the taxpayers as we start seeing the side effects of poor nutrition.
Right. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me, Kevin Shivers from NFIB Pennsylvania, and our special guest, Anthony Campisi, who's the spokesman for the Pennsylvania Coalition. What's your coalition?
Yeah, sure. It's the Coalition to Stop Food and Beverage Taxes in Pennsylvania.
And it's just – and again, the more I listen to this, the more like frustrated and upset I get, because it's – you know, again, and I know that that all kinds of promises have been attached to the dollars that were to have been raised from this new, you know, product specific, very heavy surtax. And of course, those revenues haven't been, you know, have not appeared as promised, haven't been used for the purpose for which they were promised, so on and so forth, as is often the case when you're just, again, it's a petty grasping act.
It is extraordinary. I mean, you know, anytime you want to impose a tax in Pennsylvania, you always say it's for the children, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, if you want to eliminate the tax, you got to say, well, it is eliminate property taxes. But, you know, those are the two watchwords, because those are the two most onerous issues, right? You know, the idea of paying property taxes, or the idea of not funding education. So anytime we want to impose a tax, we say it's for the kids. But this is one tax that's been imposed that demonstrably has not benefited Pennsylvania's children. The early childhood programs in the city of Philadelphia that the that this tax was designed to help. The revenues are just not there, and the number of students that are being served by these programs does not exist. So now you're taking a look at a program with a devastating economic tax that is denying people choice in that city. But the people who are supposed to benefit from it, the city's children with these early childhood programs, are not seeing the benefit. So you have to ask yourself, well, then why do we still have it? Well, here's the reason. In the city of Philadelphia, there was a huge fight led mostly by organized labor, the Service Employee International Union and some others who have been pitted against other forces that want to repeal this tax in the city. And unlike most other tax fights that we're dealing with here in Harrisburg, David, this is actually one of those efforts, a repeal effort, where there's bipartisan support. Huh. There's a state senator from Philadelphia, Anthony Williams, who teamed up with State Senator Scott Wagner. They traveled to Philadelphia last year. They held a public hearing in the city of Philadelphia to give residents the opportunity to talk about the adverse economic impacts. They were shouted down. And the hearing had to be postponed because the elements of organized labor banded together and prevented those opponents to be able to be heard. Interestingly, there was a follow-up hearing here in the city of Harrisburg at the state capitol, and some of the proponents of this tax. A great line in the interrogation where Senator Williams noted that, you know, because the advocates talk about the virtue of this, and Senator Williams noted that maybe some of those advocates wouldn't be so happy if the tax also went on their cafe lattes that they could buy from their corner coffee shop, which I guarantee you, maybe if this tax was imposed on their cafe lattes that, you know, some of these, you know, the intelligentsia in the city consume, maybe there would be a different belief and a different impetus to maybe try and find another revenue source here.
Well, and it's just, I mean, it smacks of social engineering, and it also smacks of like a culture war. I mean, that's just the condescension of the elites over people having, what the elites have decided isn't good for them.
You know, I know a number of families where children have allergies to milk, and so they're left with their only alternatives are non-milk-based beverages. So if this was really a tax to affect behavior, then it would be on sugary drinks like, you know, soda or pop instead of all of these other beverages as well.
Well, and the funny thing here is, so a lot of the mayor's allies call it social engineering. The mayor actually was really honest up front when he proposed this tax. He basically said this was a money grab. He said, you know, he wanted money to fund priorities of his. He didn't care about the health impacts. I mean, his health commissioner, who comes from New York City, clearly did. But the mayor started right up and said, you know, hey, this is a money grab. And, you know, the facts show that this just, like, doesn't work. So the mayor said that this was going to fund a few different priorities. So the city controller, who ran on a platform of supporting this tax, came out with a report showing that only 25% of the money has actually gone to the programs that the mayor laid out.
Well, and that's just the money that's been collected, even though the money that was collected has not hit the target of what had been promised.
Correct. So last fiscal year, the city was short nearly $15 million in collections for this tax. It's just not producing the revenue. And actually, there was a report just out Monday afternoon saying that even this year, after the mayor, you know, reduced his projections, they're still not hitting it. And the impacts have been real, right? So Kevin mentioned that the mayor says that this tax is to fund a new citywide pre-K program. And the mayor came out in his budget address this year and said that they're cutting the number of pre-K seats, they're cutting the number of community schools that are being created. And the mayor just last week announced a total reformatting of the city's major infrastructure initiative, in part because the money's not there. So, I mean, you look at it from a social engineering perspective, you look at it from a public policy perspective, you even look at it from a budgeting perspective. You know, it doesn't work on any of this, on any level.
Well, you know, we always talk on this show, David, about how, politics and good policy, it's not a spectator sport. And, the reason we're having this conversation, Anthony alluded to it earlier, is there's actually legislation that's moving in our state house. It's House Bill 2241. Again, we have this lawsuit that's filed in our state Supreme Court because we believe that this tax that was imposed by the city is beyond their power. But to remove any doubt, we need to pass legislation that would actually prohibit it, because the concern is that other municipalities around the state may decide that this is a wonderful way, as the mayor of Philadelphia has pointed out, just to grab some cash. And so this legislation, it's sponsored by a state representative named Mark Mustio, would prevent any local municipality from imposing these types of taxes on food and beverages, which we think would establish a strong precedent going forward for imposing any type of taxes on any type of product like they're doing in the city.
Because it's a double taxation. If these things are already subject to the state sales tax, then consumers are already paying tax for the privilege of purchasing those things.
Right.
It seems punitive and discriminatory to single out particular products, particular legal products, over others.
That's exactly right.
Well, as ever, it's our mission to try to stick up for ordinary folks and to minimize the stupidity in government. So
monumental tax.
Yes, sir. And I said minimize, not eliminate.
Yeah,
just,
that's
just,
right.
Just to minimize. So, Anthony, for people who are interested in this subject, who want to get involved, who want to learn more, where do they go?
Yeah, so the easiest thing to do is to go to our website, stopfoodandbevtaxespa.com.
Okay.
That's stopfoodandbevtaxespa.com. There's a lot of information about what this bill does, ways to get involved. It's really important as we push this through the General Assembly that people hear from their constituents that this isn't just a Philadelphia thing. This is something that impacts Pennsylvanians all over the Commonwealth.
Outstanding. Well, Anthony, thank you for your leadership. Thank you for being with us. We're down to the last of our time here. So, Kevin, where can people go to learn more about you and your group and the things that you're doing?
Sure. They can visit nfib.com/PA, or they can join the conversation on Twitter at @NFIB_PA.
And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on Sunday mornings at 8:30 at the Pennsylvania Cable Network with PMA Perspective. So thanks again to Anthony Campisi. From Kevin and me, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Two Pennsylvania cities are competing to become Amazon's second national headquarters. Undisclosed billions in taxpayer dollars are being offered to lure the online giant and the 50,000-plus jobs and spin-off economic benefits the facility will supposedly generate. This is a case where we might win by losing. The HQ2 sweepstakes is a prime example of the misguided economic development policies practiced in Pennsylvania and most other states, which try to overcome high taxes, burdensome regulations, and antiquated infrastructure by offering tax credits and other incentives to entice businesses to locate or expand within their borders. In addition to the flawed premise that this actually works, the HQ2 competition has become even more egregious due to the lack of transparency in the bids being offered by Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. Tax credits and other incentives are a de facto expenditure of public funds. Such expenditures are not directly appropriated by governmental bodies, but rather are hidden in various budget categories, essentially ceding to non-elected bureaucrats control of tax money. The state, county, and municipal governments involved have refused to disclose details of their proposals, claiming the need to keep such information hidden from competitor cities, which might use the data to one-up Pennsylvania's proposals. Trade secrets are fine for private companies, But taxpayers deserve to know how much of the public wealth is being offered to entice a large and enormously profitable company to locate here. Based on existing business climate conditions and absent tax credits and incentives, neither Pittsburgh nor Philadelphia or any location within our state's borders would be even remotely competitive in the HQ2 sweepstakes. In fact, regardless of how sweet officials make their offer, Pennsylvania has virtually no chance of landing Amazon. With the second highest corporate tax rate in the nation, regulators that are inherently hostile to business, and a legislature constantly on the prowl for new revenue sources to feed its spending addiction, Amazon could locate virtually anywhere else in the nation and find a more hospitable climate in which to do business. This was driven home in the recent Rich States, Poor States report released by the American Legislative Exchange Council. Overall, Pennsylvania ranked 38th. The good news is we eclipsed our neighboring states, New York and New Jersey. The bad news is other mid-Atlantic states, such as Virginia and North Carolina, as well as southern powerhouse states like Florida and Texas, well, they leave us in the dust. Pennsylvania also has some ticking fiscal time bombs, most notably state public employee pension systems facing over $60 billion in unfunded liabilities that, at some point, will require a massive infusion of dollars from the general fund, i.e., we the taxpayer. Add in higher property taxes, high unemployment and workers' compensation costs, and a large state debt burden, and the Keystone State becomes a very unattractive place to locate. When a company is awarded tax credits and other incentives to locate or expand in Pennsylvania, those already conducting business here unwillingly pay the price. That is because when one company does not pay its fair share of taxes, others must make up the difference. In the case of Amazon, the brick-and-mortar stores with which it competes will pay more to subsidize a direct competitor who will benefit from state and local tax breaks. Over the years, the Lincoln Institute has surveyed the owners and chief executive officers of Pennsylvania businesses. Consistently, and by a wide margin, they have opposed the state's economic development policies of picking winners and losers. They see cutting corporate tax rates and reducing burdensome regulations on all businesses as producing a rising tide that would lift all business boats. Because of the overt secrecy surrounding the bids by Pittsburgh and Philadelphia to convince Amazon to locate HQ2 here, we do not know exactly how many public dollars are being offered, nor has there been any independent analysis on the overall economic impact of the incentive packages. Worse, even when Pennsylvania has won such competitions, many companies stayed only as long as the tax abatements and incentives lasted. When they had to begin playing by the same rules as everyone else, they promptly left for better economic climates. With Amazon shining a bright light on the process, now is the time for Pennsylvania policymakers to reassess having government pick winners and losers and instead take the steps necessary to improve Pennsylvania's economic climate for all businesses. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 23 years now, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth. They include WWEC-FM and WPDC-AM in Elizabethtown, along with WCED-AM in Du Bois, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.